This is the Love Your Mom Life podcast, where we get real about getting out of your motherhood rut and creating a mom life you love. I'm your host, Nikki Oden, and I know a lot about what it's like to not love your mom life. Being a mom is hard, and being a mom with goals and dreams is even harder. Over the years, I've spent a whole lot of time on the hot mess express trying to harmonize motherhood with everything else I want out of life. But eventually, I figured it out, sort of. You can create a mom life you absolutely love. So come on, let's do this thing together. Before we dive in, this is my cute little reminder to please hit that subscribe button. Be sure to follow us on social, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And of course, be sure to visit the blog at youridealmomlife.com for real life solutions to help you take back your time and love your mom life again. Hey there, welcome to this episode of the Love Your Mom Life podcast. Today, we're talking about combating mom guilt and truly embracing your identity as a working mom with our guest, who is a mom of four and a bona fide expert whose academic research is on how identities are formed, how they become entrenched, why they're so powerful, and what it takes to change them. Get ready to be fascinated. You do not want to miss our conversation. Before we dive in, don't forget to officially subscribe or follow this podcast by clicking that follow plus or checkmark button in your podcast app. And while you're there, leave a rating and a review. The more reviews this show has, the easier it will be for other moms like you to find it. And if you like this episode, share it with a mom you love. We're all about moms supporting moms here at the Love Your Mom Life podcast. And the stuff we're talking about today needs to be heard by other mamas. Hey, do you ever wish you and I could be better connected? Well, we can. All you have to do is follow me on Instagram. My handle is my name, Nikki Oden, and I see every single like, comment, and DM on my account, and I personally respond to them. So if you want to be better connected, take a sec and go follow me on Instagram. And now let's meet our guest. Today's guest is a productivity coach who helps overwhelmed moms make more time for who and what they love. A professor by day, productivity coach by night, and devoted mom of four busy boys throughout, she knows all too well how challenging it is to juggle all the things. After becoming suicidal from the stress of keeping up with her demanding job while raising young kids, she applied her academic research skills to figure out what's scientifically shown to help you better balance it all. She shares all her insights in hopes that other moms never feel as hopeless as she once did. Connect with her on Instagram and YouTube at Solutions for Simplicity or on her website, solutionsforsimplicity.com. I am so honored that she's here. Welcome to the show, Amber Curtis, PhD.
Hi, Nikki. Thank you so much for having me. It is a privilege to speak with you.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I love this concept of battling mom guilt because it's definitely a real struggle and it's something I never tire of talking about. I've never spoken about it though in the context of identities and how those two things play together. So I'd love to start first with your story and how you came to be on this journey and ended up helping other moms the way you are today.
Thank you. I could go way back in time, and I'll try and give the condensed version. It's something that I love to talk about because I have learned so much along the way, and these are all the things I wish I could go back in time and tell my former self. If they help someone now, then I'm really blessed. But I was, you know, that person that couldn't wait to be a mom. I always dreamed of having children and never anticipated that mom guilt would be a part of that. I had no clue what mom guilt was. And, you know, for various reasons, career doors opened. I was so excited to be hired as a tenure track professor, but My life kind of got really intense in 2013. I graduated with my PhD, moved across the country, had my first son just a month later, oh, wow, and started teaching in my new position just 2 weeks after he was born.
Oh, wow.
And I was so naive. I was the one who thought I could do that because I'd always been a very motivated, you know, ambitious, high-achieving woman. But I really underestimated the biological and emotional pull I would have to be with my child all of the time. And it was only in the months following his birth that I really started to feel overwhelmed and then got very depressed and eventually suicidal because I thought I was doing everything wrong. I had never realized how much I had internalized messages about a good mom being one who stays home with their kids, yeah, or who was always available, who was there to put her child first and take care of their every needs. And these weren't even conscious thoughts I was having at that time. It was just that something felt off and I was struggling to keep up. So I imagine many of the women in your audience can relate to this, but when I was at work, I couldn't focus on work. I was worried about my baby. I was missing him. I was, you know, thinking that he might not be well taken care of because I mistakenly thought I was the only one who could care for him best. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, I know that that village, that proverbial village, is so crucial and it does exist. We can talk more about that a little bit later. But then when I was with my baby, I would get so frustrated because I couldn't do my work. Mm-hmm. And then my work wasn't getting done, or I would push myself to stay up till all hours of the night to make it happen. My son ended up having some sleep issues and I basically didn't sleep for the first 9 or so months of his life. Cow. That's of course an exaggeration, but you know, it was the perfect storm. And thankfully, after getting suicidal, my husband and my mother intervened and they got me help. And I just kind of had a big realization at that time that things needed to change, but I didn't act upon it right away. I just went back to my default and things were still very stressful, but I was getting by. Add in a couple more kids in the next couple of years. I now have 4 kids that I had in 8 years, and the demands of my job never changed, and neither did my mental stress because I always felt like I was doing things wrong, that, you know, a good mom would be home with her kids, and because I wasn't that, that I was a failure. So I really had just adopted this identity of being a failure, of being a horrible mom, because I had all of these underlying assumptions about what a good mom does or was. And those are very unique to everyone. I hope that other women have not internalized those same beliefs. But I think it's really important to take some time and think about what your beliefs are. What do you think a good mom looks like? And in my situation, I wasn't able to quit my job for financial reasons. I was very blessed to have this great job and my family depends on my income. So I felt all the more stuck. And, you know, it was about 6 years ago now that I really just knew things needed to change. And then I was ready to take the steps and figure out how to make them change. And I realized that my academic research on psychology and identity politics and things like that could be very beneficial for helping me realize what my identity was and build the identity I wanted to have instead of feel so stuck in the identity that was dragging me down. That is a very long-winded answer. I'm sorry it's not super concise, but what a journey. And now to be able to share that with other women and help them hopefully earlier in the stage or in their stages before they get to the point I did, that's my mission.
There's so much I want to pick apart with what you just said. And the thing that resonates the strongest with me right now is that we all go through adversity. And if we can just embrace the fact that our adversity has a purpose, and in your case, look at what you're doing now for other women. You just said, I want to be there for other women, hopefully earlier on in their journey so that I can help them to not go down some of the paths I went down. It is so rewarding and empowering to be able to look back at your pain and see it for what it has done for you, for what it's given you, and how much you've learned. And I love that you have taken that adversity and turned it into something so powerful and amazing. It's so inspiring, especially knowing like how dark you felt at one point and how hopeless you felt to see how far you've come. And now to have added three more kids to the mix, it really truly is such a great story. So don't worry about how long it was. I enjoyed every minute of it.
Thank you. I am so adamant looking back that our struggles really do become the source of our greatest strength. And so while it feels so awful when you're going through it, if you can hold on to the hope and the truth that you will be better off for this once you're on the other side, it's a whole new perspective. And then it does. It enables you to look back and help people who are struggling where you did.
And it is a truth. It absolutely is a truth. We just have to remember to see it that way. Hey there, Supermom. Have you grabbed a copy of my new book, But Definitely Wear Mascara? It has tons of 5-star reviews on Amazon and could be exactly what you need right now on your motherhood journey. But don't take my word for it. Here's what Ruth Sukup, mother of two and New York Times bestselling author of Living Well, Spending Less, 12 Secrets of the Good Life, had to say. Nikki Oden walks the walk. Every truth bomb and piece of advice in her book, But Definitely Wear Mascara, comes straight from her own experience. She normalizes the tough parts of motherhood to help you realize you're not alone. Her gritty, resilient spirit will inspire you to take action to create a mom life you love. Or how about this review from Farnoosh Torabi, mother of two and editor-at-large of CNET Money and host of the So Money podcast. Nikki Oden is that supportive, straight-talking mom friend we all crave. The one who will always tell you when you have spinach in your teeth simply because she cares about you. Through her hilarious, easy-to-read stories, Nikki offers tangible advice that will make your mom life easier. This book is a must-read for all moms who are simultaneously nurturing their families and their careers. And Susie Moore, host of the acclaimed Let It Be Easy podcast, raved, "Nikki brings sparkle to everything she does, and this book is no exception. She conveys real-life lessons through her fun storytelling style and encourages you in a way that feels like a warm hug from an old friend. You'll feel her love for other moms springing off every page." With reviews like that, chances are you are going to love this book. But Definitely Wear Mascara is a collection of laugh-out-loud stories served up in 40 bite-sized chapters filled with raw and easy-to-implement advice for any mom who has ever struggled with nurturing her career and her family at the same time. You'll walk away entertained, inspired, and equipped with the tools you need to create a mom life you absolutely love. Get your copy on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or wherever books are sold. Also available on Audible and Kindle. So I love this idea of identities. It really is so fascinating, especially because I know from experience, and I think what you described is that identities can run on automatic. They can run subconsciously. And we find ourselves telling these stories and then behaving in a way that aligns with that identity, whether it serves us or not. And then the idea that if an identity can run on automatic, it can also be harnessed deliberately, and then we can have some power and command over our actions, our behaviors, our responses. So let's talk more about that, like how what your research has shown and how it interplays with motherhood.
Wonderful. Well, firstly, you know, old identity scholars used to think that identities were primordial. They were given to us at birth and they were inherently about the characteristics that you have, right? What you look like, what language you speak, skin color, eye color, these very physical biomarkers that are not changeable. And a lot of old scholars used to think that your identity was static. It was going to be what you were born with, and there was nothing you could do about it. But of course, we now know that that's only one side. And even those physical biomarkers do not have to comprise your identity. Identity is instead constructed. It is a choice. Yep. And maybe not always a conscious choice, but then once you become conscious of the ability to form your own identity, then you have the power to choose who you want to be, how you want to show up. And this should be so empowering. Yes. So we can get to some of the action steps for how to do that in terms of your motherhood identity soon. But I also want to highlight the fact that there are different ways identities are formed. It is, in essence, a choice, but socialization is a huge driver of how we come to see ourselves. There's a lot of research as well about the big five personality traits of openness to experience, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism or emotional stability, and how people with certain personalities are more likely to identify a certain way. For instance, if it's not obvious, I am kind of that classic type A perfectionist personality. I am extremely conscientious. I am very agreeable where I want to fit in. I want people to like me, or my old self really needed that approval and that external validation in order to feel worthy of love and belonging. So there are a lot of other factors in the background, but it's so important for us to realize that how others may have seen us in the past, or how others may have pressured us to see ourselves, does not have to be our true identity. At any point, we can stop, evaluate, as you said, whether our identity is serving us, and then consciously choose the identity that embraces who we want to be, and then act as that person, take the daily steps and employ the habits that live out the reality of a person with that identity. And then all of the research on habits shows that when you do that, you indeed become the person that you have aspired to be.
This is so fascinating. And I think it is so encouraging to know that you aren't just, oh, the person who's always late. That doesn't have to be who you are. Or you don't have to be the person who chooses guilt every time she makes a mistake with her kids. The list is endless. So who do you want to be? I think it's such an amazing, empowering question. And to find out that there are ways to practically, on a daily basis, make that happen, it's just so exciting.
It is. And my recent research has highlighted two alternatives. Again, when we dig deeper and we think about what parts of ourself feel quote unquote wrong, or where we're not in, we don't have a positive identity or a positive psychological association with that identity. For instance, I used to have a negative association with being a working mom. Mm-hmm. We have two choices. We can, again, really think about where that identity was initiated, where it came from. And if we don't like it, we can work to change it and adopt a different identity. Or we can also step back, break apart the stereotypes or the negative connotations we have taken on in regards to this identity, and ask ourselves more bluntly, but are those true, right? Mm-hmm. Are working moms bad? Should working moms feel guilty? Should I feel bad because I'm not with my child 100% of the time? No, my answer, exactly, right?
No.
And that's the new belief that I came to have. But the point is that just because others, and maybe they don't perceive us this way, but even if you perceive that you are being judged by others because of your identity, for instance, as a working mom, that doesn't necessarily mean that there's anything wrong with you or your identity. So your second choice is to embrace your identity and let go of anyone else's expectations for you. You get to choose what you are, who you are, and no one else but you gets to decide the value, the content, the emotion, and the worth that is put into that identity. So I really went through this whole journey of first feeling like a horrible mom because I worked and I wasn't with my child or children all of the time. And more, I realized that I love being a working mom, and I love my children. I love my family. But I now realize that I am so much better as a mom when I get to do something for me, when I am doing something that I feel utilizes the gifts and the talents that I've been given, when my children can see me pursuing my dreams and aspirations, when I can benefit my family with the financial resources that my career has brought. And more than anything, again, it's a personal choice. So the problem wasn't with being a working mom. It's not with being a stay-at-home mom, right? I personally have come to despise those labels because I know that stay-at-home moms work harder than anybody else. So choosing to see yourself in a positive way is really key. And remembering that only you get to decide your identity and that no one else has to approve of it is really, really important.
It's so important. And I think one of the most profound things you just said was, even if someone else does judge you as negative because you choose to stay home or choose to work outside the home, it doesn't mean that you chose the wrong identity. You can still embrace your identity and really align with who you want to be. If that's who you want to be, who cares what everyone else thinks? I mean, obviously, aside from being a serial killer, I think that is obvious, right? We're not talking about those kinds of identities. But yeah, I think a lot of times we perceive ourselves as being judged, but in reality, we're just judging ourselves. Because most people, especially people who aren't really, really close to you, aren't in your inner five and don't know what you're doing every single day, are just thinking about themselves. So the stay-at-home mom is probably like, wow, this woman probably thinks that I really gave up on myself and my goals and dreams because I'm home with my kids and she's out there changing the world. And then the working mom's like, wow, she probably thinks that I'm a terrible mother because I let someone else take care of my kids while I go off selfishly to pursue my career. I mean, there's no winning there. You're telling yourself a story that probably isn't true, A, but B, even if it is true, should not impact who you've decided to be and who in terms of identity makes you happy, most productive. I feel like you'd like were channeling me when you were saying, I want to use the gifts and the talents that I have to make an impact on the world outside of my family. I want my kids to see me doing that. And I feel exactly the same way. I think a mother is the center of her household. And so her fulfillment, her joy, her happiness, her patience, all of that is going to impact the rest of the family. And if she's feeling fulfilled and if she is feeling like she is in alignment with who she wants to be, it's going to change everything. It's going to change how she parents, how, you know, her relationship with her spouse. And that is almost how you change the world, one mom at a time. If all the moms were happy, if all the moms were fulfilled, the world would be a different place.
And I have worked with so many women now who come to me for productivity or work-life balance coaching, and they're just in tears because they feel like they have put themselves on hold for so many years that they don't even know who they are anymore. Yeah. It is a very real problem that when we become mothers, we often lose our identity. And we very much do, because who we were before kids is no longer who we are. And that's very matter of fact, because you could never have anticipated how your life would change once you have other little souls in your care. Yeah. And that is an opportunity, but of course it's a big challenge. There are a lot of practical challenges that go along with being a working mom and trying to juggle all of the needs, all of the schedules, all of the, you know, demands upon you with the 24 hours in a day and your very limited energy. So yes, there are so many ways that I love to help women with those practical tips and strategies. But more than anything, it really is just about stepping back and figuring out how you feel about it all. What do you want your life to look like? And if the working mom identity is appealing to you, which I know for most of your audience, right? We are working moms, and I want us to embrace that. I want us to stop feeling guilty for having passions and dreams and being able to serve not only our families, but the rest of the world in whatever way we do. If you are, however, feeling like you're not happy at your work or you want to be home with your kids, you know, listen to that, because mom guilt is not bad in and of itself. And that this is where I really had a breakthrough, was I realized, as I'm sure you have, that mom guilt is such a wonderful sign that you care, right? It's like the flashing lights that come on and say, hey, you know, something feels off. Is this a real threat? Is this a real problem? Chances are no. Chances are that the reason you are worried or feeling guilty is because you care so deeply about being a great mom, about your children having, you know, the life that you want them to have. If the guilt is over something legitimate, right, then of course, yes, let's work to change that. And if you want to segue out of working mom life for a time, or whatever your unique situation is, give yourself permission to do that and let go of the external expectations and obligations that would try to prevent you otherwise or from doing otherwise. I think mom guilt is such a fascinating thing because, as others have said, but I had this moment too, I'm like, do dads feel guilty? Like, no one ever talks about dad guilt. Why is mom guilt a thing when there's no male component, or I wasn't aware that there was? And I very much observed that my husband had no clue what I was struggling with psychologically. He would go to work. We are a dual working household. And so he would very easily get up, go do his job, come home, love hanging out with me and our son or children, and then not be up at night feeling like a failure because of X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, well, why am I wrestling with this? For so long, I thought I was the only one. Then I realized this is actually quite common. And if you are struggling with mom guilt, there are very helpful ways that you can combat it.
Well, I always like to say, and I think thinking about mom guilt as a sign that you care is a beautiful way to look at it. And then I take it a step further and I say, if you continue to wallow in that guilt, you're making a choice. You're choosing to feel guilty. And that guilt is not going to change what already happened. So take the lesson, make the apology if you need to, and move on. Because your kids, and I think this is where we differ with the dads, your kids need to be loved and seen and heard. And the dads are like, yeah, but I love you. I'm taking care of you. Why should I feel guilty? You know, like, I protect you. I'm here for you. And I think we take it into a whole other realm because we are nurturers and we are collaborators and supporters. And we feel that in a different way. I think we can take a little bit from that masculine counterpart and say, after a point, okay, at this point, I'm choosing the guilt. At this point, I'm choosing to wallow, and it's not doing me or my child any good. It doesn't help my child to see me berating myself or to put myself down or to feel bad. And so I like to frame it that way for moms, because we can't always control our first thought. And I think our first thought is often, you put it so beautifully, born from that deep-rooted feeling of caring so much. So that's our first thought is, okay, I'm a terrible mother. A good mother would never have done that or forgotten that or missed that. But let's take responsibility for our second thought, because like you said, is it true what I'm saying to myself? Probably not. And does my kid know how loved he or she is? Do they know that they're cared for and protected and supported? The answer is almost always yes. And so that's where we have to make that decision about how we're going to proceed and speak to ourselves.
Completely. There is really fascinating research that has emerged in recent years that when we have children, part of our child's DNA remains in us. And so we very much do physiologically continue to feel what our children are feeling. There is such a deep, incredible connection between mothers and children that fathers don't have, just because by biology, they were not the ones that carried and birthed the child. Right. And, you know, when we realize that we are connected to our children and that we feel what they feel, it's such a beautiful chance to deepen our connections, but it does, again, require that we step back and change our inner dialogue, right? Because our brain is constantly going to be giving us all of these thoughts, all of these critical messages. We are so often our own worst enemy. Mm-hmm. And it is up to you to consciously stop your brain and say, listen, I know you're feeling sad or threatened, or really name whatever emotion you're feeling. I'm feeling guilty because blah, blah, blah. But you know what? Like, that is not the truth. That is my perception. And I'm feeling that way because I'm exhausted. I'm under a big deadline at work. Right. I had a really rough conversation with a colleague. Like, my capacity to handle these emotions is not as strong as it normally would be.
Right.
So you have to really watch out for those moments when you are feeling weak or just struggling in general, and you're going to be that much more susceptible to believing the negative messages that your brain is always going to be serving you. Your brain is wired to protect you, to keep you safe, and to really try and scare you from taking risks, from doing big things, from anything that it perceives as outside your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. But the beautiful thing about identity research and what the message I really hope all of your audience comes away with is that you don't need to deny that part of yourself or your brain, right? You are allowed, you will continue to have these thoughts, but you get to choose to talk back to them,
right?
And be that other voice that says, no, I am a wonderful mom. I am a wonderful wife. I am building the life of my dreams, and I choose to go to work. I choose to be fully present with my kids when I am with them. I believe that it is quality, not quantity of time that matters. Although on that note, there's other fascinating research that women today, even working moms spend way more quantity of time with their children than moms 50 years ago did.
Huh.
So not only is the quality of time usually better because as working moms, we are really trying to make the most of the time we do have, but even that is quantitatively more time than women of the past used to spend with their children. So I know this is all so much more than we can delve into and give every topic the justice it deserves, but I just want to encourage other women, right, that you are not alone. There are so many ways that you are doing incredible things, and whatever negativity you associate with your identity doesn't have to stay that way. You have the power to choose, or if you love your identity, right, then really work to make sure that you're not letting others' expectations make you feel bad about who you are.
Amen, Professor Curtis. I mean, that was exactly what this show is about, honestly. And I just love, love, love the work you're doing and how you're using your experience to help other moms. So before we wrap up, if you could say there's one major step or the first step that women need to take if they'd like to start to shift their identity and really align with who they want to be, what is that first step?
The first step is to do a brain dump. Journal out your beliefs about what a good mom is or what a good mom does. Let yourself get it all out and then set it aside for a day or two and come back and read it with new eyes. Pretend to be your own devil's advocate and argue against everything that you wrote, or at least question whether what you wrote is the truth, right? So in my example, I used to believe that a good mom was with her children 24/7. But is that true, right? Would I be a better mom if I was with my kids 24/7? Are even stay-at-home moms with their kids 24/7? Is it even possible to be with your kids 24/7? So there's no judgment. There's no good or bad. It's about what feels right to you. And you need to let go of the guilt that you associate with whatever you're doing, right? If you feel bad about it, that's a beautiful warning sign, but it doesn't mean it's the truth. And you get to choose to either reframe your thoughts and see what you're doing as a positive thing. Think of all the good that comes from what you're doing and what your identity is. Or you can take action steps to change it so that you feel better and are more in alignment with what is important to you.
I love that. I love the idea of doing the brain dump. Everyone listening was like, Nikki's going to love that. Nikki loves a brain dump. And then the extra step of coming back and saying, is this true? Is this as important as I perceive it to be? Is this really what I believe? I love that. That is a fascinating tip.
If I could add in a couple of other things to do after that big first step, I am a big fan of looking around and finding other women that are either doing the same thing as you, Mm-hmm. And looking at whether they seem to be struggling with the same things you do. I mean, if you have women close to you that you can ask, ask them, because chances are they are struggling. But if they have overcome those struggles, they can give you insights into how they did so. And you can adopt some of their thoughts to change your own perspective. It's also so important to look at celebrities or people that you admire. And what are they doing? What thoughts might they have that are enabling them to do what you aspire to do and not seem to be so held back by their own negative thoughts?
Great tips. It's always awesome to have a model or somebody to look at as inspiration, because the truth is, chances are, if it's been done before, you can do it. And most likely it has been done before. And so why reinvent the wheel? Why not look at what seems to work for other people? And if they're in your circle, if they're accessible to you, ask them. Women love to help other women. They just need to be asked.
Yes. I know that many of us feel like we should be able to do it all, or that we shouldn't let anyone know that we're struggling. But when someone has overcome those struggles, they can't help but want to share what helped
Absolutely.
Them. So definitely don't be afraid to ask. You are never the only one.
And you are a testament to that. Everything that you're doing, everything that you have shared is just proof that women want to help other women. So what can people do if they want to work with you or find out more or dive into what you have to offer?
I would be so honored to share what I have learned. And again, everything I provide is based on these scientific insights and the research I have done, coupled with my own very hard experience all these years. But the biggest thing that I think would help your audience is my Pinpoint Your Priorities Playbook, which is a workbook that teaches you my signature 5Ds formula for figuring out what to prioritize, right? When you have a million things to do, as us working moms constantly do, how do you know where to truly focus your effort in order to see the most important results for your time, and then also give yourself permission to let go of a bunch of things. And so it's a really helpful guide. It can be accessed at bit.ly/pinpointyourpriorities.
We will definitely put that link in the show notes, so it's an easy one click for our audience.
Thank you, Nikki.
I love that you were able to spend some time with us this morning to give us your insight and share such fascinating knowledge.
Thank you. It's my privilege.
Well, that wraps up our conversation with Amber Curtis, PhD. I know you took a ton of value from it. Hopefully you can go back and take notes if you were driving, because this one was one for the records. We'll see you next time on the Love Your Mom Life podcast. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I really hope you took something of value from it. If you liked this episode, please share it with someone you love. And it would mean the world if you would leave a rating or a review. Don't forget to follow us on social media at Your Ideal Mom Life on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I can't wait to be with you in the next episode of the Love Your Mom Life podcast.